On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We're taking you on a road trip this 4th of July, and we promise plenty of fireworks. Meet Jack and Marge Leonard.
I'd like some vino.
Where's the corkscrew to open the bottle?
I threw it away.
Oh,
no, I don't know. You put it...
Jeez. I gave it to you.
You did not.
Well, you're going to have to open it with your teeth.
She's now 84. He's turning 90. They were living out their retirement years in Arizona not so long ago when their son Mike, a correspondent for NBC's Today Show, invited them on a trip. Not a cruise on the Caribbean or a grand tour of Europe or an African safari, but a month-long trek around the country in an RV, an American road trip. They jumped at the invitation. So did their adult grandchildren. Mike packed the video camera, and off they careened into the wild blue yonder. The journey took them deep into the heart of family and into the grain of red, white, blue, and more, America. This hour, On Point, on the road, listening to America across generations with the Leonard family. We recorded this program earlier, so we won't be taking your calls this hour. Just sit back and enjoy the ride on this 4th of July. Joining me now from Chicago is Mike Leonard, correspondent for NBC's Today Show and author of the new book, The Ride of Our Lives, Roadside Lessons of an American Family. Happy 4th of July, Mike Leonard.
Thank you, Tom, and we did careen, too.
Yes, we'll learn a little bit about that. You careened awfully quickly. Mike Leonard, some of us will know you from the show. Others may not. Introduce yourself. Who is this Mike Leonard, this home movie videographer termed big-time Today Show correspondent, and why were you looking to head out on the road?
Well, I've been a correspondent for Today for 25 years, but I got into TV late when I was 30. I was living in Phoenix, and I had tried out for a professional hockey team and done a bunch of other jobs, construction worker and all the rest. But my hobby was taking home movies with a Super 8 film camera. One of my friends said, hey, you could do something with that, and suggested TV. And it was an odd suggestion because I didn't look or sound like a TV guy. But I went around and looked for a job in Phoenix, got one. A year and a half later, a fellow from NBC was in a hotel room on vacation, saw a story I did, and hired me for the Today Show. So off I went. And my job is basically to just do stories on everyday life, travel the country, and do whatever I want to do. And this situation was different, though, because I actually started off not thinking it was a story. I got a call from my parents, who were in a rental home in Phoenix, had moved from California to Phoenix, and were isolated. And they sounded sad. My dad was 87 at the time, my mom 82.
So it wasn't a story idea. It was a problem, a family problem.
It was a problem. And I didn't know what to do because I was 2,000 miles away in Chicago with a job. And, you know, I've got four kids of my own. But for some reason, it sounds like a cliche, but I had a dream about an RV, picking them up and giving them a ride.
Sounds
and
like
a
Moby
dream or
Dick
a nightmare.
Or
yeah, right. So I said to my wife at breakfast, I said, hey, this is going to sound crazy, but I have to get an RV. I'm going to pick up my parents and give them one last adventure around the country. And she said, it is crazy, because we'd never been in an RV and we're not campers. And she said, and it's your parents, and they're really eccentric people. So I recruited my kids, three of my grown children and a daughter-in-law, ended up renting a second RV, and off we went.
This was a giant caravan. Off you went. How did you sell your parents, Jack and Marge, on this? And he was, what, 87 at the time?
He was 87. Well, they were stuck in this rental home. It wasn't a bad home, but they were isolated. They couldn't talk to anybody or walk anywhere. So I think the idea of just getting out was great. They didn't really know what an RV was. They'd never been in one. And so when we showed up, my dad had a mountain of luggage, even though I told him not to, and he brought ties and sport coats and shiny shoes. And I said, no need for that stuff. But you know how those guys are. When they get up in years, they wear ties on Saturday morning and even at a Piggly Wiggly on the road somewhere. So
they were ready to jump out of this rental apartment that they found themselves in a community they weren't really clicking with. They couldn't walk to anything. They were here both in their 80s and feeling isolated. Suddenly, there you show up with this tremendous caravan, and at least one of these RVs is really and truly huge. I mean, a monstrous huge thing.
Huge, yeah.
It looks like Tammy Wynette might travel in it, or Dolly Parton.
Yeah, and oddly enough, when you rent these things, they don't give you a lot. I thought it would be like astronaut training, you know, where you'd be going for like 6 months or something. But they say, okay, here's how you turn it on. Let's go around the block once. Okay, see ya. And the big one was like the size of a city bus, basically.
Basically, and it turned out not to be so easy to drive. You hit your first rut in the road on this big road trip within minutes. Describe that for us. Maybe read a little bit for us, Mike.
Well, what we did is we rented one RV, a Winnebago in Chicago, drove it out to Phoenix and picked up the big one. I was driving the big one, picked my parents up, and then headed for the highway. Mm-hmm. And Margarita, my daughter-in-law, who was driving the Winnebago, said, we need to get some gas. And I said, okay, I'll follow you. And I'll just read this is the first part of the book, first chapter. And I go, let's see here. Walkie-talkie one, Dad, where are you? Walkie-talkie two, we're 1 minute away. We got caught at a light. You're at that gas station in the middle of the next block, right? Walkie-talkie one, yeah, but we have a slight problem. Walkie-talkie two, what problem? Walkie-talkie one, Margarita didn't swing wide enough around the gas pump and we ran into a concrete thing. It tore out the bottom of the RV. What should I do? Margarita's sitting on the ground crying. Walkie-talkie two, holy crap. And that's how it started, 30 minutes after we picked my parents up. And I thought, really, I truly thought, well, that's it. It's over.
We've wrecked one of the RVs, so much for that. You were on down the road in the big one, as you describe it, the huge RV, trying to turn around and go back. Cars are honking at you in a sort of Roy Orbison car horn choir, as you describe it.
And my mom's flipping off the drivers.
Yes, your mom's giving the finger to the traffic in Mesa, Arizona, 82 years old. Before we get any further, Mike, I wish you'd introduce these people for us. Your mom, your dad, Jack, and Marge. I mean, give us your armchair psychologist impressions of your parents, your understanding. What did you know about their inner lives, their own childhoods, as you set out on this journey?
Well, they're very, very funny people, but they're exact opposites. My dad believes every person on earth is a good person and is out just to help him out, and he'll help them out, and the world will be great. My mom thinks most people are packing concealed weapons, and she doesn't want to deal with them. And I joked to somebody, I said, if there were a pencil, my dad would be the lead and my mom is the eraser, because he always believes everything is possible. She believes nothing is possible. And they argue a lot. My mom drinks. My dad doesn't. She's not a heavy drinker, but she'll have a few pops at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so I'm one of four boys who grew up in this kind of raucous and very funny household where they were disagreeing about almost everything almost every day and would argue. But they also they laughed a lot, and mostly laughed at themselves and at the little foibles of everyday life. And so in our house where we grew up, none of us were exceptional kids or anything. So we had a lot to laugh about, because we did goof up a lot and we did make a lot of mistakes. And, I went to 5 years of high school and this and that. So thank goodness we were able to laugh, because otherwise it looked like a tragedy in the making. And so getting on the road with them in this confined area, in this rolling tin can, and having these arguments and having all that kind of stuff happen was the big concern.
But there was something magnetic here. I mean, magnetic enough that you got your adult, fairly well-grown children to come along with you. You even got your boss interested. What was the allure of these two?
Well, I think what they are is they are us. All the doubts that we might have about whether to trust somebody it comes right out of my mother's mouth. And all the hopes we have that somebody down the street might give us a break comes out of my dad's mouth. And so, in a sense, they're real vocal, and they're very funny, and everything, every thought or every occurrence comes flying out of their mouth, because they're not quiet people. My kids, I asked them to go. They all have – we have a business, a family production company with doing videos for some commercials and things like that. But I convinced them to shut it down, and by shutting it down, basically my kids, they knew they were going to go broke, because they're young and they don't have a lot of money. But I think they knew what I knew, that this was going to be an open-ended adventure. We aren't RV people. I think maybe in the back of our minds we thought that would be cool. And I think in the back of a lot of people's minds, they've had that thought. Wouldn't it be neat to get in an RV and travel across the country with no real itinerary, except you need to get back by a certain date and see what's out there? And so I talked to my bosses on the Today Show, and at first I said, I just need the time off. I'm taking a month off. Yeah. But since I videotape everything, and going back to my home movie days, I knew we'd make at least a family documentary out of the deal. Mm. But as soon as we got rolling, I knew it was a bigger story, because the things that were happening, the things that were being said, stories that were coming out both from my parents and from people we met along the way, along this road of everyday life America, started resonating not only with me but with my kids about what life was like across the span of three generations and across the span of the country. So we just kept videotaping and rolling the cameras, and all of those shots and all of those sentences that were spoken became, you know, the fodder for this book, and I transcribed everything.
Right, and took a lot of us with you on that. A lot of it broadcast on NBC. We've got a little bit of that sound. There was a moment here. Let's just play, if I may. You're in Louisiana, deep in Bayou country, in Brobridge, the self-proclaimed crawfish capital of the world. The eccentric character capital of the world, you say. The phone book lists people by their nicknames, and you get the taste of conservative politics, family ties running deep, introduced us there to a character named Crip.
Later that night, we go to Mulatz, a local dance hall, where the story of the two old people taking one last lap around the country seems to strike a nerve with the locals.
I'd love to do that with my parents and let them see the rest of the United States. The furthest they've been was Biloxi.
Envy coming right at you. I'd like to take my parents. They haven't been further than Biloxi, and there you were on the big road. Did people respond that way generally to your trip, saying, wow, I should do that?
All the time. And it's that we were like, you know, we roll across. And I think it's in our souls, though. It's how our country was founded and all the rest. It's, you know, that what's over the next hill? What's over the next mountain? And so when we did that, everybody along the road said, man, I'd love to do it. But a lot of people said, I don't know if I could do that with my family because in such close quarters, we drive each other crazy.
Right. Let's listen to a little bit here. We've got some clips from what ran on the Today Show. Pulling into Atlanta, Mike Leonard introduces his parents to a Christian rap artist, a friend of his, Danny Wilson. Danny Wilson introduces them to his music and a whole new way of speaking.
I said the word. Word means I agree with you.
Yeah.
So word. Ice is jewelry. Ice jewelry.
Oh,
if something, if I say, Mrs. Leonard,
yeah.
you're iced out.
I want some ice for Valentine's
Day. Hey, we got it.
And word means you agree with them?
Yeah.
What is the point? Why don't they just say fine?
I mean, I don't
that's
know.
Another
we'll
just
have to go back and ask them.
I like Danny explaining the whole rap thing to me, which I never, holy rap, I should say.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
Wonderful.
Word.
The whole rap thing, Marge Leonard got there, right along with her husband Jack, wondering why their son Mike driving right on down the road in their great big RV. Mike Leonard joins us from Chicago, and right now his mother, Marge Leonard, joins us from Glenview, Illinois, just outside Chicago. Marge, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I feel like I know you from these clips on the Today Show. You're a spicy lady.
Well, I think I am, but, you know, I get grief sometimes from my boys, but, you know, I live with five men for 63 years, so I have to speak up for myself.
Yeah, we hear about you flipping off the honking traffic. It sounds like you could deal with some grief from your boys. You know, your son Mike describes you and Jack, your husband, as polar extremes, he the eternal optimist, you, on the other hand, you know, practicing stinking, everything stinks. By her calculations, he writes, the per capita number of creeps and jackasses on the planet is the highest in recorded history. Marge, did your trip across the country confirm that view in you?
Well, he's right. You know, I'm the pessimist, but I think I'm a pessimist because, oh, I don't know, always thinking of, I want wonderful things, but then I think, oh, I'll prepare myself, you know, like, so if it isn't good, and then if it's good, I feel good. And if it's bad, then I think, well, you know, I was right.
So
now, that's crazy. That's crazy.
I don't know. Look on the dark side first, and you won't be disappointed.
Well, that's the way I feel, but that's crazy.
Let me ask you, when Mike called you up, and you and Jack had found yourself in the situation in Arizona, you weren't entirely happy with it, he said, what do you say we go on the road all over the country in a big RV? Was that immediately attractive to you, or were you worried about being trapped with these kids and grandkids in a rolling tin can, however big?
Well, I really was. I thought, oh, my God, you know, I'm this big bus, and I don't like driving. I don't like bridges. I don't like this. And I thought, I better get my act together. You know, this is crazy. I've got to straighten myself out. And it was the best thing I ever, ever did. It was wonderful. I'm free of all my neurotic things. I hope.
Are you free of all neurotic things from one RV trip? This is like a trip to some exotic sanctuary here, Mike. You've cured your mom. Way to go.
I've invented a new type of psychoanalysis.
Therapy. Road trip psychoanalysis. Maybe not the first ones to do that. Marge, I wanted to ask you, too, because, you know, Mike framed this up as like, here are my old parents, and they can't travel that much anymore, and I want to give them one last big view of the whole country. How does that feel? I mean, when he frames it that way, he's putting mortality right in your face.
Yeah, he's sort of saying, well, you're on your way out, your toes up, you know, et cetera. And I thought, no, I've got a long way to go.
Right.
I'm going on this trip, and your dad's going, well, you know, I wish his dad was here right now, but he's gone to the post office or whatever. But, you know, I was ready to go, and it was super. I rolled with the punches, let's put it that way.
Mike, give us some advice about putting three generations in a couple of big RVs and traveling together, a family. You know, one generation can have its problems, let alone two, let alone three. Give us what's your primer on how to do it?
Well, I think, as my mom said, and she knows that we can be as annoying. Like, you know, a lot of people say, well, I couldn't take my parents because they would annoy me. But we annoy our parents as well and each other. And I think that, as my mom said, you really have to roll with the punches. I knew we were going to be in this environment for a month and that little things would annoy us. So I just decided we all had sort of a pep talk. Don't let those things annoy us. And also to change the conversation mode, because a lot of times my dad will talk about the same thing, about the rich getting richer and this, that, you know, oh, really, Dad? Know that.
So we his hobby horse.
I would ask my mom and my dad these really specific questions about what they had for lunch when they were kids, what kind of shoes they wore, and just ask for details. And out of those questions came some really interesting discussions about life. And then I learned and my kids learned about what life was like three generations ago. And don't you think, Mom, that was a good way to do it?
It was super. It was wonderful. You know, I shed, let's see, 20 years. I'm young now.
You didn't feel like you were trapped in a rolling interrogation, Marge?
Oh, no, not at all. No, I don't know how to explain it, but I thought, my God, I'm 84 years old, and I felt like I was 60.
Did you ever think I would say,
ring chicken?
Hey, Mom, did you ever think I was digging too deep with the questions?
Oh, yeah, a few times. Yes.
Because
this
trip?
You dug in things I didn't want to answer.
Where did it get sensitive, if I may ask?
Well, sort of in my past life with my father, who was difficult. But, you know, I tried to forget it, but he kept digging and digging, and I thought, why doesn't he quit? You know?
Mike, what were you hoping? What was the heart of darkness or light here?
Well, a couple things. Number one, my mom and dad, like a lot of people of their generation, they're not the sort of confessional Jerry Springer, age.
Tell all, right.
They just hold things. I mean, Brokaw and the Greatest Generation, people sort of came back and went to work. And I know things that happened in my parents' lives were difficult. And I know it shapes your personality and stuff like that. But I wanted my kids to know, and I wanted to know myself. I mean, we had an older sister. I'm one of four boys, but right. My mom and dad had a baby girl who died at birth, but wasn't really talked about much. Mm-hmm. But me being a parent and my daughter about to become a parent, I wanted to know how you deal with that kind of stuff. And also in my mom's situation, when we went back to the cemetery in Patterson, I said, aren't you going to see your dad's grave? And she said, no. Well, I wanted to know why, because basically when we grew up, my mom hid that from us, and we had a happy childhood, even though it must have gnawed at her on the inside. So by bringing that out, I think, in a sense, my mom is more heroic because she had something that troubled her. And if she has a few pops at the end of the day or throws a four-letter word out there every now and then, big deal, because what she blunted instead was walking around and moping around and saying to us, oh, you guys didn't know what kind of a life I've had as a kid. We didn't hear that. We just had a happy, fun-loving mom.
Right.
So I think it was important to know that.
It's a life with everything that means. You write a bit about that relationship with her father, a man who didn't even open her Christmas present to him. Maybe there's a bit you could read that would take us into that a little bit, if you don't mind, Mike.
Sure. My mom, that one night after the cemetery, I started digging deeper with these questions. And at that point, it was just myself, my dad, my mom, and my older son, Matthew. And she had talked about the fact that, he's a bit abusive and that he would drink and that he, was gambling money away and things like that. And then she said, She talked to me that he wouldn't even open my Christmas present to him. And I said, I don't get why somebody wouldn't open a little girl's Christmas present, I exclaimed. What does that prove? I don't know, Mom replied. I got used to it. I didn't know what was wrong with him. That last line struck me. Something was wrong with him, not her. Children of abusive parents often point the finger at themselves, believing that they are somehow to blame. My mom took a different course of action. I hit him with a chair once, she said in a calm voice. My mother needed money for something, groceries, something little. He wouldn't give it to her. I was about 9 years old and was holding on to her leg. I was afraid to leave my mother's side, thinking he might hurt her. She kept telling me to go in the other room, but I wouldn't leave. Finally, I'd had enough. She was still asking for the money, and he was still refusing. I walked over to the other side of the room, picked up a big, heavy dining room chair. I don't know how I lifted it. Then came at him from behind and smashed it over his head. He crashed to the floor, and I took off, running out of the house to a hiding place in the alley. I was afraid he was going to kill me, but instead he went off and got drunk or something. I can't remember. Men who show bravery in combat are often honored with ribbons and medals, sometimes even parades. Their obituaries are filled with glowing descriptions of courage in the face of hostile fire. When my mom dies, there won't be any such praise. A 9-year-old girl armed with a dining room chair is not the stuff of legend. A woman who falls on a psychological grenade to protect her children from emotional harm is never saluted as a conquering hero. Scan the horizon for my mother's mark, and you'll see nothing but flat, smooth ground. There won't, however, be a hole. She filled that up, and that's her monument.
Mike Leonard, reading from his book, The Ride of Our Lives, about an epic RV journey around the country with his 80-something parents, Jack and Marge Leonard. Marge is with us. Marge, he had you on a kind of a rolling couch there, strapped
yep.
in and pulling it right out of you. Did it feel better once your son and grandchildren knew this story more explicitly?
Yes, I think it did, you know, because in my era when we were growing up, you never talked about stuff like that. I mean, it was sort of like bad or something, but I sort of thought, well, who needs to hear it, you know, but eventually it came out, and I feel good because I don't know, I felt like I was cleansed or something like that.
Yeah, maybe
so. I really feel good.
I have to say, there was such a waterfall of laughter running through this trip at the same time. You could not help notice it. I mean, you and Jack are just always cutting up. I found you really the life of the party all over the place here, not necessarily in the way that we as viewers riding along or Mike might have expected. One of the hardest things of planning any vacation, I guess, is figuring out where to stop and how to keep everybody interested in. Mike found out a few things about his parents, about your parents, Mike, interest on this trip. Let's listen.
Cruising east through Texas, we stop, of course, at the Alamo. By now, I have detected a troubling pattern of behavior. My parents seem unmoved by sites of historical significance or natural beauty. Go by a franchised establishment, however.
There's Subway, Mike. There's McDonald's.
Barcelona Sporting Goods, Jack.
Office Depot, Marge.
Or anything else they might see on a regular basis.
There's a fitness place, Jack. Ooh, there's a furniture showroom.
Calico Corners.
And they freak out.
Costco?
Now, Marge, what is that about? Forget the Alamo, forget the Grand Canyon. There's Calico Corners. What's up with that?
I really don't know. I mean, we just sat there looking at each other, and we were so thrilled to be on this trip. And, you know, we're just looking at these, you know, simple little things.
Yeah.
And even though we didn't miss the, you know, the great, great stuff. And we had, we were just sort of relaxed and, we sort of kid each other, and we laugh, thank God. And thank God he isn't here right now because he'd be right on the phone.
Well, hey, Tom.
Yes, Mike.
I threw him out of the house.
Well, I saw how you had to struggle to pull him out of conversations with strangers right across this country.
God.
This husband of yours can't talk.
He could never say goodbye, never. And God love him, you know, because he loves people. And I'll say, Jack, you know, they're busy. Let them go. Oh, I just want to say one more thing, you know.
See, if he were 50 years younger, he'd have a talk show. Mike.
Oh, absolutely. He would. Oh, he'd love it.
Oh, sure
maybe,
he would.
Maybe he has a chance now.
Maybe it's not too late. Get Jack on there. What do you think, Mike?
He wouldn't hear that
Jack
theme music at the end. It gives you the cue, though.
I threw him out. He's gone. He's gone to the bank to
turn up the hearing aid.
He's gone to the bank to check out my checking account balance because I'm all screwed up.
Hey, Tom. Yes, please.
I had mentioned about that just real quickly about the those things about Costco and Subway and all the rest.
Office Depot. Kind of,
yeah, and at first it bothered me. I thought, why the heck did I want to just take them down to the mini mall?
Right. Know, well, why are we going across the whole country? They can just go to the strip mall.
Yeah. But what I think it is mm-hmm. and what's really a positive, is that they've been able to sort of find their fun in everyday life stuff. They don't need anything big. They don't need a grand cruise around the Cayman Islands and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think they were seeing those familiar things that are the signposts of their everyday life. And my parents have always been happy with everyday life. And I think that was a great lesson for us as kids to grow up with people who didn't need this sort of extra stimulus. We could just sit around and yuck and laugh about stuff.
You know, I got the sense of everyday life across many generations traveling with you, not just the three involved with this RV. Of course, and you mentioned earlier, your eldest daughter was about to have a baby in Chicago, and that was the end point for this trip, but also the family who came before you somehow riding along here. You write about a moment when your father goes back to his alma mater, Mount St. Mary's College in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Tell us about the family history that came before, what it had meant to him to be there, and what it was like when your eternally optimistic father showed up, 80-something, looking to reconnect.
Well, my dad's parents came from Ireland, and they both had, I think the limit was a second-grade education, and they came to America. His dad was 19 with $10 in his pocket, like most of those immigrants. They got on a boat and wanted a new life. And his mom was a domestic at first, and she came over, and they met and married, and my, you know, they had a life and raised kids. Two of their four children died of childhood diseases that could be cured today. But when it came time to college, my dad's mom saved money for a college education. And a lot of kids in high school didn't go to college back then, especially where they lived. So he heard about the school, and off he went to Mount St. Mary's, and he loved it. And his mom passed away when he was a sophomore in college. But he loved the school, and he loved the school because I think it was that opportunity to make a better life. It was money saved by his mother that got him to the school. So when we took the trip, I thought it'll be special to go back to this to see the school. My dad loves it. It's a beautiful place. It's a wonderful school. But what happened is we didn't announce our presence because for a lot of reasons. Number one, we didn't have a schedule. Number two, I just like to see things the way they are. And we're not special. We didn't expect any kind of
brass
band.
Yep.
We just want to see the place. But my dad ran into a receptionist, and all he wanted to do was meet an official from the college. I think he just wanted to say, hey, look, here's my family. We just came from thousands and thousands of miles away.
Anybody,
but
just
the
receptionist, to say hi.
Yeah, the receptionist is basically saying, well, you don't have an appointment. And he was saying, yeah, I know, but we just drove all this way. And she was saying, I don't know who to refer you to, and back and forth. And obviously the college would have welcomed him with open arms had they known he was there. But my dad is not the kind of guy to push through those things. Mm-hmm. He respects authority no matter who is that position of authority. And so, you know, after going all that distance to see his school, and he just wanted to show it off to us, he left empty-handed. Nobody was there to talk to him.
You were driving through your life story and his. They were living their everyday life. Marge, was this Jack setting himself up to be whacked down one more time?
I don't know, but he accepts everything what happens in his life. I mean, I would just say, hey, Jack, you know, fight that or something like that. But he rolls with the punches and... You know,
but,
and I think, oh, well, good for you, Jack,
I have to say, an incredibly likable man.
Hey, Mom.
He's wonderful.
One thing, though, is that you say you don't like to go back, and he does. So explain that.
You
don't like to go back in time.
Well, in his life, everything was perfect. Mine wasn't. I had a superstar mom, but I had unfortunately, a difficult father, and so I tried to forget it, but you can't forget. And you have to adjust, and I think I'm adjusting now at my old age.
There's some very poignant moments on this trip. Mike, you took your parents to New London, Connecticut, an old Navy town that served as their home base during most of World War II. They were a young couple there. Future was bright, but not everything went according to plan. Let's listen. In this scene from your Today Show piece, the RV pulls up to the old neighborhood.
That's it, right there with the red roof.
We stop at the house where my parents and three other young Navy couples rented rooms during World War II.
Oh, they were the nicest people we ever knew, Marge.
Yeah, great.
My father came home from the sea. The other men didn't. New London is also the burial place of my parents' only daughter, their first child, named Anne, who died at birth.
Never gave thought that things wouldn't be great. Well, let me tell you, when it didn't turn out just right, it was one hell of a shock.
Oh, no, you don't forget it. No. No, this baby, that baby had a bad heart. And those days, they couldn't fix things in those days like they do today.
They couldn't fix things in those days like they do today. Marge, I want to ask you, as I watch this, I mean, you've lived a long time. You've taken your wax, and people do. That house you shared during World War II with several other couples, if I heard it right, Jack was the only sailor who survived that war. Did I get that correct?
That is right.
Out of the four men who were in the part of that house.
They were all submariners, yeah. I guess you would say, mm-hmm. and one by one, they were, they never returned.
So you had seen that. You lost a child, your first daughter there. As you rode around the country with your son and your grandchildren, I wonder, you've had to develop some toughness. Do they have it? Are they tough? Are they soft and you tough, or is it all the same cloth? How did it feel to you, Marge?
I don't know. I think I'm tougher than I think. You know, I'm soft, but when things come, when you have to face them, I think I'm a little tougher than my husband and my boys. Maybe, I don't know. I just figure I have to be the tough one. I am one of three girls, mm-hmm. and. All of a sudden, I'm hit with a husband and four sons. Mm. And I didn't know anything about boys, but, boy, I sure figured it out, and I was one ahead of them all the time.
Mike, what do you think on this toughness, softness scale between generations? I couldn't help thinking about it. I wonder if you did.
Yeah, I that was one of the major revelations, I think, that with my mom and dad, especially dad, because he is like he backed off that confrontation at the college. And it made me mad because I thought, come on, just push. And I used to think that I was tougher than he was or is because I was a hockey player and I boxed and I sort of forced my way into this job and did all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But then I saw him and heard more of these stories about what happened and saw how he reacted to the college situation. And he just keeps getting back up. He believes that it's going to turn out well, and a lot of times it doesn't. And he gets back up, and he believes it's going to happen again the next day. And to me, that resilience is a real strength. And I used to, I changed. I think that my dad is way stronger than I am, and I know my mom is too. Even though sometimes she's physically afraid of driving or flying and all the rest, I haven't had to go through what they went through. And yet to push on with your life and give your kids a happy life despite those situations, that's toughness that I don't know if I have that yet.
So here you were on the road learning about one another across three generations as you traveled, also learning about this country. And I wanted to ask both of you, Marge, maybe first you saw a great big chunk of America on this trip. We're always comparing ourselves to the past, thinking about the future. What did you make of the USA that you saw outside the windows, that you saw when you'd pull up to the curb across the country? What did you make of the state of the nation, Marge?
Oh, gosh, Tom. I was amazed. I mean, I grew up on the East Coast and lived in the Midwest and the West, but I had never seen middle America. Or, basically the Southwest all across the country. Mm-hmm. And it was just unreal. I mean, half the time I couldn't talk because I was so, amazed and thrilled with having the chance that, Mike took us on this trip. I mean, half the time we didn't talk because we just looked and looked and looked. And it was wonderful.
Was it still beautiful to you, or was it?
It was really beautiful. It was, New Mexico, I had never been there, and Texas, I had never been to Texas. And
Cajun country,
down the bayou.
Louisiana, I was crazy. I was ready to move to Louisiana. I just loved it down there.
That would have been bad timing, given Katrina.
Yeah. Exactly, yes. Although I think the place where we were, I don't think they were hit that much.
That's merciful.
Anyhow, the people were, the people all over were wonderful.
And what did Jack think? I saw how Jack loved to dive into conversations. When he'd come back and report to you, was he happy with the state of mind of people he was talking to? Did they seem friendly and open to him?
Well, Jack, you know, my favorite expression is every friend's a vote with Jack. He just he just talks to everyone. I mean, you don't know how many dinners have been burned in our house. He just, you know, oh, I just saw Tom, and right. he has a problem. I had to talk to him, and, you know, the dinner goes out the window.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's super. I wish he was here. No, if he was here, he'd grab the phone. So.
Mike, how about you, Mike? You paid a lot of attention to the country professionally with your job, but here you were day after day, seeing town after town, city after city, talking with a lot of people. The country's in an interesting moment right now. We've got a war going on, all kinds of questions about immigration and security and even patriotism, making a living, all the rest. What impressions did you take away?
Well, it's like anything else. The more you know about something, the more you understand. And I think basically everything is so polarized now. But down deep down in beneath all of that, everybody just wants to get recognized for what they do. They don't maybe want fame, you know, the Britney Spears type of fame, but they just want to leave some kind of a mark. And they don't think they can in a celebrity culture. So I think it's humbling for people in not a good way, you know. And I think a lot of times people think, well, what did my life mean? And one of the points I tried to make in this book is that those lives mean a lot, because each one of these people probably told somebody else, hey, they told a bag boy that day, hey, you're doing a good job. That kid might have finished high school because of that, but they don't get that thanks, you know. So it's the little things of life and the folks that we had meet along the way who were just appreciative and wanted to, you know, we put them on the air, and there was a mechanic who we put on the air, and I heard from him, and he was so excited because he was just talking about Megan's baby, and it was just his moment in this sort of, he said, I'm really nobody, but it was great to be recognized. And I think nowadays people don't make things like they used to make. You know, they don't make belts, and they don't make air conditioners or made somewhere else, and people really don't know what they're worth as much. And I think they're worth a lot, but their confidence has been eroded by both the polarization and the yelling back and forth, and the fact that it's more and more a celebrity culture.
And I guess in some fashion, when you showed up with cameras and the great big caravan, you brought a moment where their lives got framed by you pulling through.
Exactly. And that's what I wanted to do with our family's story, too. And I've gotten tons of emails and letters from around the country since the book came out from people saying, that's our story. And I knew that would be, because it's everybody's story. And it's basically a fanfare for the common man. It's just my dad and mom and are taking a bow in this book for every dad and mom out there. And I think people are very, very appreciative of the fact that this book is about the little things in life. Nothing big happened. We just went on a trip. And big things, you know, kind of came to us in our minds. And I think that folks who read it have felt motivated and inspired about their own lives, because we made it through despite all the ups and downs. And we had a few laughs. And we celebrate what we have. And I think we're celebrating what everybody has, really, with that.
There was a backstory running through this. As you wended your way towards Chicago, where your daughter Megan was due to have a baby soon, that would be your first grandchild and Marge and Jack's first great-grandchild, there were some touch-and-go moments, some concern about the health of the progress of that pregnancy.
It was interesting because when the journey started, my mom would say, whenever we talked about Megan's baby, she would sort of get quiet. And this, of course, is before we knew the details of her baby. And she'd say, first babies are tough. Well, I got a call from my wife as we were heading back toward Chicago saying that there's something wrong with the ultrasound. The baby hasn't thrived. It hasn't been taking nutrition or whatever. Well, I don't know what that is. And so I didn't want... Now, here my parents have kept the bad news of their baby from me for 60 years. I'm driving back, and I didn't tell my parents about this potential bad news with our daughter's baby. And so I was hiding from them what they were hiding from me as we had headed
it's
back.
It's supposed and to it be was, the celebratory end of the whole trip, and suddenly there's this fringe of danger around it. Nobody wants to hear about anything that could go amiss. And, of course, Marge, you knew without even knowing that pregnancies can be difficult and the outcome absolutely unpredictable.
Yeah, and that's why every time I hear, a young person, a friend, say, expecting their first, I don't say much because I'm always scared for them. Mm-hmm. And I just think, everything will be okay, which I thought would be okay, and it wasn't. And so I try to be nice and kind, and I don't say much, and they probably think, what's wrong with her?
Right.
But I just, you know, I sort of go along and, oh, yes. And,
you've got a life experience that you're drawing on there. Of course it is.
Hey, Mom, did you know when we were going back that there was something, that I was hiding something from you?
No, I didn't, but Dad did.
Did he really?
Yeah, I really didn't, but Dad got it somehow, you know.
Marge,
and on the day of the birth, were you worried?
Megan's baby?
Yeah, I was
scared. I'm always scared till the baby has arrived and everything's fine, yeah.
Of course, we saw the great footage of everybody coming into the hospital room one after another, men and women, young and old, and the expression, everyone is the same. The hands go up to the mouth, the eyes open up, everyone feels ultimately in the presence of a miracle. We won't hide the ending to this story. It turned out beautifully and very well. March, I wanted to ask you something else about, there you were in your 80s, Jack almost 90, now particularly, and you're riding along with your grandchildren. I looked to me like most of them were in their, I know, late teens or 20s. What's it like having a conversation with your 20-something grandchildren? Do you speak the same language? Can you sit and talk with them for hours, or do you need Mike as the intermediary? What's it like talking across that generation gap?
I'm sort of a bit off the wall, right, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you can hear me.
No,
I sort of go right. Well, they think I'm off the chart anyhow, and I've always been that way, you know. I'm not like an 84-year-old, and I should be, you know. But
I'll take you as a great example of an 84-year-old. Mike, what about your kids, Mike, and them spending all that time with their 80-something grandparents? Were they into it?
Oh, yeah, they're into it. And that's why I think my parents have been great, because they adapt, and they're young. They're young at heart. They're goofy. You know, a lot of times people stop being goofy. They think it's immature, and they say, well, I'm an adult now. But the stuff that makes you laugh when you're 15 or 18 or 19 should make you laugh when you're 80, and it does with my parents. They laugh at the goofiest, littlest things, and that appeals to my children and to me as well. Mm-hmm. And so my kids can sit and talk to my mom and dad about really anything, and both of them, I think because of that sense of youth that they have, keep up with things. You know, they know what's going on. So both, they're not lost, not sitting there talking about something that my kids aren't interested in, but my mom will actually know who these rap artists are or the movie stars and all that kind of stuff.
Marge, I have to say, I got a kind of message that must be particularly somehow comforting for young people, which is, you know, don't worry too much. I mean, laugh, because you're going to roll on through this one way or the other. You and Jack were laughing all the time.
I know, and we're still laughing. You know, even though I'm a worrier, I still laugh because my husband makes me laugh, you know. And I wish I could be like him, you know.
Well,
I hope I go toes up before he does.
Oh, I don't know what to hope on that front. Now, Mike, I've got to ask you, here you were, you're barreling along in these two giant vehicles. Of course, the war and the oil prices had not begun to bite then.
Mm-hmm.
What about an RV travel as the way to go? You must have used a few Olympic-sized swimming pools full of gasoline on this trip. I mean, now that would cost you the national debt to do the same thing. What do you make of RV travel in the day of, I don't know, global warming and all the rest? Was it on your mind?
Yeah, I think, but all you have to do is, the best part of our journey was not the Alamo, which my parents went through in 30 seconds, but it was the stuff, it was just everyday life, it's just like a small town. You could just you could rent an RV and not go more than 100 miles mm-hmm. or 200 miles mm-hmm. and pull into a small town and find and see something that you don't see. So you don't have to go to Mount Rushmore or out to the Pacific Northwest and spend a gazillion dollars on gas. It's really, the whole environment is just inside that box. It's when you sit down and have ham sandwiches, or you have something for dinner, and you sit and talk, and you get those little details we talked about, and you roll with the punches. And we brought some guitars and a banjo, and we had some music. But we would wander through these towns and meet some people. So I don't think you really have to go very far away or spend a whole lot of money. You could take that RV, and you could go, you know, like I say, a half hour away and spend the time. And it's really more about being together and more about saying, okay, look, there's no TVs, there's no cell phones here, there's none of this. We're just gonna have fun because we have to get through this together. And that's, you know, here I am, I'm 58 years old now, and I found out something from my family that I haven't learned in my whole life because we threw away all those distractions. I think sometimes people have a big itinerary is just another distraction.
Marge, would
Throw
you climb back on that big old bus, climb back on that RV?
I'd go today.
There's a vote. There's
right
a vote
now,
for sure.
I'm packed.
Well, ready to roll. And Mike, I hear a rumor that we may end up seeing this on a movie screen one day.
Yeah, it's weird because when I didn't have a book in mind, you know, I just did this thing. Then Today Show happened. Then a literary agent called me and said, "Hey, that's a book." And so I wrote this book proposal, and Random House Ballantyne bought it. And then they say, "Well, we have to talk about the movie rights." And I thought, how does a movie know about this?" But they got the word out from the publishers, and so Disney bought the movie rights to the book. And I hope they stay true to the – I know they'll change some of the stuff, but true to the situation that it is about little things.
Marge, you are going to be one wild character when you make the big screen. I can tell you right now.
I hope I'm still alive.
Hang in there for it. It's going to be a great show.
Oh, you're wonderful. Thank you.
Marge, please give our best to Jack. I'm sorry we didn't get to talk to him today, but I'm sure he'll bend our ear another time.
He will, for sure.
And bend it.
Marge Leonard, thanks so much for joining us. And Mike, who brought us Marge and Jack and the whole Leonard clan, really great job. Thanks so much for bringing all this to light. It was wonderful to take the road trip with you. Thanks a lot for everything.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Mike Leonard, author of The Ride of Our Lives, Roadside Lessons of an American Family. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, Hillary McQuilkin, Tanya Rowley, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Angel Cozzelli and Roya Wolverson. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. Happy 4th of July, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.